Welcome back to the Unbox Broadcast. Today, Dr. Davis and I explore the 7 questions every leader should ask themselves to improve how they function in their relationships. We're ready to dive in, and we're excited you're here. So stick around as we help you unbox the power and potential of your leadership.
I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and leadership coach. This is my co-host, R.P. Soriano. Soriano attended Johns Hopkins Carey Business School, worked in the financial industry, and was an international consultant before partnering with me to launch Unbox to Lead. Me? Well, I worked for over 20 years as a senior pastor and a community organizer. Then I retired and started a leader's peer support community called Unbox to Lead. Soriano and I have been friends since the early 90s, and with our varied experiences and expertise, we help leaders reach the next level in their leadership. So join us for the next few moments as we unbox the power and the potential of your relationships, your leadership, and your life.
Welcome back, one and all, wherever in the world you may be. I'm R.P. Soriano, and with me once again is Dr. Robert Davis, family and relationship. You're a little too early there. Let me get this. Let me introduce you, man. Come on. I mean, it's not every day you get an introduction like this. So let me continue. May I?
Go ahead, man. Take it
all
away.
Right. All right. Dr. Robert Davis, family and workplace relationship expert and author of Seasoned with Grace, God's Recipe for Healthy Family Communication, and the 12 Steps to Becoming an Unboxed Leader. Now, cue in Robert Davis. How are you this week, my friend?
Man, I'm doing wonderful. I guess I got so excited. I'm not used to people saying my name without having some other descriptive words that the FCC will not allow us to use here on this format. So I was just so excited. And it's a new year, man, and great opportunities, potential, everything. So I'm really just raring to go.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too. And I hope everyone out there who is starting off their new year with hope and passion and excitement for whatever it is that they love doing, whatever it is that gets them excited in their life. I hope the new year is kicking off well and full of prosperity and love and all those good things. I want to remind everyone to please like, share, and subscribe to the broadcast. Also, be sure to follow all of our social pages. You can visit our blog page at www.unboxtolead.com. There you can access past episodes of our broadcast and webinars, and you can also sign up for our newsletter so you never miss out on the latest content or specials that we offer for our services. I also want to remind everyone about the BIPOC Executive Director's Leaders Peer Support Scholarship. Thanks to our partners and sponsors, we have 20 scholarships available for BIPOC executive directors of nonprofits and or community organizations. The first cohort begins Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. Am I correct in that, Dr. Davis?
That is correct.
All right. And we are currently taking applications now, so we want you to make sure you get your application in. There are only 20 spots available for this cohort. So go ahead and visit our website, www.unboxtolead.com/scholarship. And there you can apply to the program. Again, as we've said in the past, this program is designed to address the unique challenges that BIPOC leaders and their organizations face. And one goal and the primary goal here is to provide equity through learning, coaching, support, growth, and to give BIPOC leaders access to resources that they otherwise might not be able to access or to be able to financially access. And that's why the scholarship covers the full cost of the program. So if you're a BIPOC leader of a nonprofit organization or a community organization, or you know someone who is, be sure to have them visit and share the website. Once again, www.unboxtolead.com/scholarship. Once again, I want to remind or point out that these scholarships have been made possible through the generosity of our foundation and corporate sponsors. So if you're an organization or a foundation that would like to sponsor this program so that we can make sure that more seats are available and we can build more cohorts, shoot us an email at scholarship@unboxtolead.com. That's scholarship@unboxtolead.com. All right, that's out of the way. let's get into our topic for the day. And the topic for the day, what we're talking about is seven questions that every leader should ask themselves in order to improve how they function in their relationships. So I'm excited to dive into this. Dr. Davis, why don't you take it from there? And I wanted to say that this topic gets right to the root of what we do, right to the root of who we are as an organization. So I am, that's why I'm excited to be exploring this topic. So go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you shared with our audience the BIPOC scholarship, because, you know, we have developed an entire community that supports and helps leaders to create healthy workplace cultures, but more than that, so they can reach their personal and professional life goals, and just so that they can actually be the best that they can be, supports that they need emotionally, support that they need in every facet of life. And one of the primary focuses of Unbox to Lead is to help leaders become more emotionally mature. We talk about becoming a more authentic leader, or as we put it, an unboxed leader. One of the ways we believe leaders become more authentic is by learning more about how their emotional computers were pre-programmed by the family of origin. You and I have had several conversations, Raphael, about, you know, how much family enrichment work we should bring into Unbox to Lead, and how much people might view our leadership support and our leadership growth community as, you know, pseudo family therapy. And that's been a journey that we've had for a while. And I remember when we first started, I was a little skeptical about you were a little skeptical about talking too much and using too much language that would lead people to maybe think that what we're trying to do is family therapy, because that's really not what we're here to do. We're not family therapists. I'm a family life educator. And so we're not family therapists. We don't, you know, we don't want to turn this into a family therapy. And then as we began to progress, you saw how helping people to improve in family relationships is just as important as anything else that we do. And I want to just kind of kick it back to you to talk about that journey and what you observed and came to.
Yeah, I mean, I earned my MBA and my concentration was in general management. So I spent a lot of my focus, instead of taking the primary finance track that a lot of people in MBA programs take, I took the more of the leadership OD track. So my work in leadership development and leadership training at a graduate level never incorporated that facet.
Okay.
And so when we started to do this, it was naturally uncomfortable for me to think about leaders somehow looking at not only looking at their current family and how they function within their current family system, but also looking back on their family of origin and their history there and those relationships and how that impacts their leadership. That just seemed completely foreign to me. Yeah. But as you said, as we developed the program, as we worked with other leaders, as we brought leaders on this broadcast and listened to them talk about their family history, as you worked with me to do that kind of thing, I started to realize, wow, there's a huge gap here. This is really the key that unlocks almost everything to help a leader better, to be more effective in how they interact and how they work in their relationships. Again, this isn't an attempt to drum up old memories or hurtful events or help people to get over or to get through those things. This is a way for us to build understanding, a better understanding of who we are. And through that, we can then modify or change our behavior if need be, instead of, as you say, and let me make this last point, I'm sorry, instead of, as you point out, we're pre-programmed, right? And a lot of times when you're pre-programmed, this is just automatic behavior. You have no idea or you're not even conscious of your behavior. And this helps you to become more conscious of that and then give you the skills to make those changes. Sorry, go ahead.
And I think one of the things that that a lot of people miss, and I missed it for years, is the intersectionality between our family, our workplace relationships. So what we do is we try to get training or coaching on how to improve workplace relationships. And then we go to a therapist to talk about, you know, whatever our family problems, whether it's our current family or working through childhood trauma or childhood issues. Then we, you know, we go somewhere else when we want to talk about emotional support. And it's kind of like we have all of these leadership things spread out, not realizing that every one of them intersect with the other. And that's one of the things that, you know, we're trying to do here at Unbox to Lead is to make sure that all of these various intersections are being addressed so that we recognize that how the leader's family of origin and their current family functions has a direct impact on how they're going to relate and function in their current workplace. We understand that the emotional and mental health of a leader directly impacts how well they're going to pursue their personal life goals and their professional goals. We understand that, you know, the space that they need to pursue those personal and professional goals has a direct impact on burnout and fatigue. And it's, you know, and I could just keep going on about how they all intersect. And it's very important that that we look at it that way. So I got to a place, as you remember, I was saying, hey, listen, let's not really talk about the family part on the front end. And then, you know, you turned around and said, no, I'm telling you, this is going to be important. And so,
And let me interject one thing here. And it's exactly the reason for what you just said, what you just highlighted here. First of all, it's the thing that differentiates us. It is our skill. It is what we're good at. What you're good at. I say we, because I've been taking some French and I'm trying to get better at it. So we, and it's the other thing you pointed out, this way, the way that we compartmentalize our lives. I mean, historically in business, we've been taught leave your personal life at home. That doesn't come into the workplace. As time has gone on and research has been done, people have said people have realized, the experts say you've got to bring your whole self to work. But what exactly does that mean? We use these phrases, we use these catchwords. What I like to say is, or the way that I like to phrase it is, our personal lives mirror a lot of the way businesses are set up or the way businesses function. A lot of times businesses function in silos. So you have each department becomes very protective of what they're doing, and they become very hesitant to work with other departments. You have one business, but you have marketing that is not really all that willing to work with sales. Sales that's not really willing to work with marketing. Finance should have some kind of say so in how both of those departments their approach. But everybody is siloed, and just how you painted that picture, we're siloing ourselves. We're saying, I am work RP, I am home RP, my family is, you know, who I was back then, and being able to bring that all together is going to make us far more effective in whatever we do, because all of those things, you're right, all of those things are connected. You can't just take it off and be something different just because you're not at home or just because you're not at work.
Yeah. The reason that this part of our conversation is so important is because how we relate, and you just hit on it and I spoke about it as well, how we relate, interact, and function as a leader is heavily influenced by our family of origin, by the way we were raised. We watched how people manage relationship conflict, how they build friendships, how new people are integrated into the family, all of those things. We watched, you know, and we learned, and we got our cues from our family of origin, you know, from our sibling position, the circumstances, events around our birth, the way that our parents focused on us and interacted with us. What we saw as modeled relative to conflict resolution. Today, I don't want us to spend too much time to discussing family, but as we go through these essential questions that we're going to discuss, these seven essential questions that leaders should ask, I do want you to understand that your answers are heavily influenced by your family of origin, the place where the emotional computer was pre-programmed. So I do want you to make sure that you have that in the back of your mind as we're going. This is how my computer was pre-programmed.
Okay. So today, basically, if what I hear you saying is that we're not going to be addressing family, but rather we're going to keep family in the back of our minds as we think about how we function in other relationships. That's
Yeah, I want you to put your family there, watch them as they kind of like in the back of the mind, as you said, watch how they're interacting and whatnot. And then as you're answering these questions about how you relate, I want you to kind of be able to reference back like, oh, and it's going to happen. You're going to have a lot of epiphanies if you really do the work that we're going to prescribe today. This is going to be some pretty deep work if you're willing to do it. If you're willing to get into it and really answer these questions, we're going to share them with you. If you're really willing to do this, you're going to discover that it's going to tell you an awful lot about yourself. It's going to tell you an awful lot about your family. And I think you're going to have those epiphanies. And the good thing about those epiphanies is that it helps us to get away from the blame game. In other words, too often we say, I am the way I am because of my mom or because of my dad, and you know, or my brothers and sisters didn't like me, and my mom didn't give me enough hugs, whatever it may be. But I think as we begin to answer these types of questions, we realize that it's a little more complex than that, that we are trying to navigate and manage relationships, and that everyone else that we've ever interacted with was doing the exact same thing, for better or for worse. And so it's more important for us to understand how we can improve what we're doing versus, you know, over-focusing on what others should have or didn't do correctly.
Okay, so let's start with this then. Before we dive into the, well, let's start with this. How where does the leader begin? It sounds like it's critical that a leader understand how to evaluate what they're doing in these relationships. So how do they start to evaluate that?
Yeah, and they evaluated like any evaluation, any type of assessment, it comes from asking questions and knowing the right questions to ask.
Okay. All right. So it's interesting that you mentioned asking the right questions, because I think a large and important skill set in leadership is knowing the right questions to ask. This is true. I mean, this is true both in the operations of your business or your organization, and as a leader who is setting the vision for where the company is going, right? Knowing the right questions is, and knowing what the right questions are is critical to any kind of success. So what are the right questions that a leader has to ask then?
Okay. Today, I'm going to share seven questions, and that's going to, which is really going to get to the heart of it. I'm going to share seven questions that really start the process of developing effective strategies for improving how we function in relationships. And like I said before, in the back of your mind, I want you to think about your family. I want you to think about how you function in your family, as well as how you function within the workplace. In the forefront of your mind, I want you to think about how you develop a strategy to improve in each of these areas addressed in each one of the questions. So back of the mind is the family. And the forefront is, okay, this is who I am. Now, how do I develop a strategy to get better? And that's what leadership questions, that's what leaders do. Leaders don't have all the answers. Effective leaders don't have all the answers, but they know the right questions to ask. And once they ask the right questions, their team, and they surround themselves with competent people, their team can help them with the answers to those questions, which then equips them or gives them the ability to develop strategies to come up with the right solutions. And that's the important thing for a leader, and the same skill set, and we've said this over and over again, Raphael, the same skill set that you use when you are trying to develop a vision or move your organization is the same skill set that you use for improving self and improving relationships, et cetera. It's the same skill set. It's just that we need to apply it. We do it. Many of us apply it so well to our organizational leadership, but we don't apply it to our own personal development.
Got it. All right. I want to remind everyone that you are watching Unboxed. I'm RP Soriano here with Dr. Robert Davis, and we're discussing the seven essential questions that every leader should ask in order to improve their relationships. Robert, just before the break, you mentioned that there are seven questions that really start the process of developing effective strategies for improving how we function in relationships. So for our listeners and viewers, our format for today, the way we're going to approach this is that We're going to be sharing the questions and explaining them, and then we'll have a conversation about each question. So I hope as we discuss each question, our audience can begin to develop their own strategies as well for this area. And so before we get started, we should have said that this at the beginning of the show. I think we should include this in the introduction. Everyone should probably have some a pen and paper ready to be able to write down as you listen to these questions, kind of jot down your feelings about it or your initial thoughts. You got yours? I got mine. I got mine here. And so let's give I'll just give a second here and do some faux writing and deal with the dead air. All right. Okay. Take us through the questions, Robert. I think everybody's got their pen and paper ready.
All right. So seven questions that each leader should ask. And this is, when we talk about relationships, we cannot talk about them in the abstract. We have to talk about them in the specific. Relationships are with specific people in specific context, specific locations and situations. So we need to put faces. And so the first question that we're going to ask is, who are the people that I am most reactive towards or dependent upon? Who are the people that I'm most reactive towards or dependent upon? And whether it's people that I'm dependent upon for love and approval or people that I would rather avoid, what could I do to become less dependent or reactive? That's the real heart that we're trying to get to. So as I look at, like, who are the people that really evoke an emotional response within me? So let me just say this. It can be, who is the person that I turn to when I have a success? The first person that I want to run and tell who I have a success. Now, that's not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. But you still need to be aware of this person's influence on you emotionally. But then there are some people who it does have a certain, it's an unhealthy dependency upon. It's a lack of us being able to function on our own. And so we're dependent on them. We need their love. We need their approval. We need their acceptance. So I want you to think about that. And then the second thing I want you to think about, because a lot of times we don't view that as being emotional. Mm-hmm. We think about emotion as, who's the person who makes me angry, who makes me sad, who annoys me, who frustrates me, you know, who gets on my last nerve. As my mom would say, you're getting on my last nerve. So I think I would need to be on my mom's list, because I was always getting on her last nerve. How many last nerves did
that's
she
pretty,
have?
I was going to say, that's a pretty strong nerve, man. The last nerve really holds out. All the nerves before that were pretty weak, but that last nerve, man, has been able to deal with you for years.
I has been able to deal with me for 40 plus years. But, so the first thing is to begin to write out. And I would think about people who cause the greatest emotional reaction within me. On that paper, as you write their name, you very well may also want to start, especially the ones that we are most reactive towards. You want to even start writing down some of the emotions that you experienced, that you feel when you interact with them. So again, you know, you might say Robert, and the word would be annoyed, frustrated, confused. You know, Raphael, you're not supposed to laugh at that, man, because then they're going to think that those are the words you use.
I mean, in the beginning, you said you weren't used to anybody giving you any praise. I didn't think you were thinking about me. I thought you were thinking about the other 99% of people that that deal with you. Let me ask you something, Robert. Let me ask you this here. When you talk about this, who are the people that let's take this first part about the most reactive to the people I'm most dependent on. Can you talk a little bit more about how that looks in a work setting? I'm imagining. Well, let me set the stage here. Let me ask this question. See if I'm on the right track with this. You're leading your executive team. You have a couple of individuals who are always rah rah rah, who tell you you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. Who, you know, you feel or maybe it's not even that. Maybe you just click so well with them. Yeah, you just enjoy being around them. You enjoy their conversation. You have a lot of things in common. The small talk is great. Meetings just seem to just flow and just work so well. And you just enjoy being around that person. And then you have maybe you have people on your team that you're just kind of neutral towards. Mm-hmm. There's not really much of a connection there. And then you, like you said, you may have people on your team that just, whether they intentionally do it or whether there is something behind it or for some reason, it just doesn't work. How does that look at the dynamic of the relationship? What does it look like when you're in a meeting and you've got all of these different personalities together? How a leader who is reactive to that, what are some of the behaviors that they might be exhibiting? And how would people be experiencing it, I guess?
So here's the thing that most high-level leaders are good at. They're good at being able to externally mask their emotions. So in their heart and in their mind, they're calling Jim every cuss word you can call him. Mm. They're talking about how stupid he is. I'm talking about effective leaders. A lot of effective leaders are good at masking their emotions. They know they're professional. So they don't go on tirades. You know, you hear about those old marketing agencies where the guy would knock stuff over and would, you know, berate people and stuff. You don't hear about that as much. People are really trying not to have an openly hostile workplace. But then there's something that I want to share. It's called psychic energy. And I'm not talking about psychic such as, but it's that kind of invisible
vibe. Is that what your last psychic? Is that what your psychic does when you go to see them? Is that why you stop? Is that why you stop seeing?
I don't go see the psychic, but every TV show that has a psychic, they're always going.
When your psychic did that, that's when you said, "Oh, this psychic."
Yeah, that's it. I'm done. Where's the exit? But the psychic energy that I'm talking about is what some of us refer to as a vibe or an energy, that sixth sense that kind of lets us know what's really going on behind the scene, and so our team can pick up on it. So while on the external, we're being very professional, we're answering professional, we're smiling, we're doing all that stuff, they can pick up that those hidden signals. There's a certain energy that just emanates. And I can't explain it. It's invisible. It's inexplicable, but it's there. And so we need to be very careful and intentional about what we're thinking so that it doesn't show up that kind of way. So that when we are annoyed with a person, that's why when I identify that my reaction to Jim's actions or Jim makes me become annoyed. I try not to use the term makes me because we make our own decisions, but you know, Jim makes me annoyed. Sarah makes me frustrated and Paul makes me angry. You know, if I can just, and even if it's a neutral thing, you know, sometimes you'll realize that I don't have any issues with the person, but it's kind of a little awkward when it's just us together. So, you know, Sally Sue, I feel awkward around or whatever it may be. But by knowing that, you know, as G.I. Joe used to say, is G.I. Joe against Destro. G.I. Joe says, now you know,
and knowing is half the battle.
And it Man, really is. It,
nothing ever says 80s children than that.
Yeah. Born in the 70s, became self-aware in the 80s, came of age in the 90s. And so all of my shortcomings, I attributed, man, to just being from that generation. Yeah. But that's the thing that we want. We want to be aware. And that's why I said to put the names and the faces together. So that, you know, when we're in these meetings, it's not a facade. It's not faking it till you make it. It's us actually saying, you know what? I want to become, and I'm not going to talk about it too much today, but one time we're going to get into a conversation about how we become more curious. I want to become more curious about what's going on within me that I react towards Jim this way. Mm. And what's going on within Jim that is leading him to, you know, to exhibit in this particular way. So I want to understand myself and I want to understand Jim so that I can have a stronger better relationship. And we'll talk about how that looks at another time.
Okay. All right. Shall we move on to the next question?
Yes, let's go ahead.
Okay.
So number two is, how can I be more open and transparent without defending myself? How can I be more open and transparent without defending myself? Mm. And when we say open and transparent, we're talking about, and this is something that kind of was the cornerstone for my doctoral dissertation. My friend, Dr. Zephan Lister, who is a professor at Loma Linda University and a phenomenal mind, he did a presentation one time, and in the presentation he said these words: "I make myself known so that I might be known." And I, man, that's why I did my whole dissertation on effective family communication, effective African-American family communication, because that concept of being known for the sake of being known. So that's what we mean when we talk about being open and transparent. I can share who I am, what I'm thinking, what I believe, how I feel, without needing to defend myself. I can say, I am angry, without needing to spend the next 30 minutes trying to justify, explain, and defend why I'm feeling angry. And the strongest, healthiest relationships are the ones where I can say who I am, what I'm experiencing, what I'm thinking, and when we get into more family and personal relationships, what my dreams, goals, and aspirations are, without having to justify and defend who I am and why I'm feeling this way or thinking this way. I can just make myself known. And so how can I be more open without defending myself, or without and transparent without defending myself?
I think this speaks to what you said just as we got into these questions about what we try to help leaders achieve at Unbox to Lead, and that is emotional maturity. And what you're describing takes a lot of emotional maturity, especially when you have history with people and you are, and it's just an automatic thing, right? So you say this, they say that, you react. It's just, you don't even have to write a script for it. You know exactly what is going to happen, or an outside observer would know exactly what's going to happen. Yeah, I think we can think back at our parents or siblings or close friends who have very dynamic relationships, or even us. I say looking at others, because it's easier for us to observe Monday morning quarterback and pick apart what's wrong with them than it is for us to see our own behavior. But I think we can all think about individuals who are in very dynamic or highly emotionally, you know, reactive relationships, and predict and know this is exactly what's going to happen, because it happens all the time. They're just locked into this cycle of the way that they react to each other. And nobody can seem to make any kind of progress because they're focused on winning an argument, making their points, you know, laying out their case. And that's basically the approach that is taken. And I think that's what I hear you saying, is that instead of being able to say, this is who I am, I don't need to really apologize for that, or I don't need to justify it. I want you to understand how I'm feeling. I want you to understand who I am. And then I'll engage with you in that process so that we can move forward. I'll hear you a little bit better. You can hear me a little bit better. But I've noticed this in my own personal relationships, and I've started to realize, why am I beating my head against the wall? I can't be in a relationship where all I do is argue my points. Yeah. You just don't get anywhere. You know, I start from being sensitive and arguing instead of saying, let me better understand what's going on here, how I'm feeling and how this other person is feeling. And let's just try to move forward. You know, that's just kind of how I see that.
And we're gonna pick up the other five next week's show. But I want to end on just another reason why this is so important, because as we talk about the intersectionality between workplace and home, you know, especially I want us just to look at home. This, I make myself known so that I might be known. How can I become more open and transparent without defending myself? Imagine a relationship where you could turn to your spouse and say, I find myself being physically attracted to this other person. And I just wanted you to know that. The average, I don't know any guy.
You better not say that while your wife is making grits on the stove.
Yes.
Little Al Green reference there.
Yes. Anybody knows old Al? Al got into the church in a heartbeat after that. But yeah, you know, that type of transparency, to be able to look at, you know, those who are closest to you in your circle and to be able to say, I am afraid of this. This is where I have failed. This is where I need to grow. This is what my struggle is. This is where my lust is. This is where my shortcoming is, you know, just to be able to do that. And I know a lot, I want to talk to you know, to our men out there. I want you to think about this because, you know, there's a weight that's on the man's shoulder as it relates to providing for the home. And, to, you know, and when a man loses his job, I've heard of so many men that have lost their job and they just didn't tell their wife. They just kept getting up every morning and going out of the house and had nowhere to go. They just literally drive around all day, go to a park or something, but they just couldn't tell their wife, I lost my job and I'm scared and I don't know what's coming next. I don't know what to do and I'm terrified. How does a person become, and this is for the people that we love, that are closest to us, that we would die for. How do I get to a place where I can be more open and transparent in those relationships? And then how can I be more open and transparent in the work? Now, of course, you don't need to tell somebody at work that you're having romantic feelings for, you know, somebody else. I would strongly advise against that. But just in general, how do I become more open and transparent? How do I become, you know, my better self? And that right there is a question that will help us to have deeper, more meaningful relationships. I can't wait to get into next week where we get into these other five. This is exciting.
Yeah. So as Dr. Davis said, we'll pick up the rest of these questions in our next episode. So it'll be a two-part episode, and we look forward to spending time with everyone again to get back into this. Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. Thank you once again, Dr. Davis, for your insight and expertise. The Unboxed broadcast is produced by Bobby Davis Jr., graphic and video design provided by Damon Mace, and marketing and promotion by John Sedano. Remember to visit our website at www.unboxedtolead.com. For Dr. Robert Davis, I'm R.P. Soriano. We look forward to seeing you at the next broadcast of Unboxed as we help you unbox the power and potential of your leadership. Be well.
Unboxed provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxedtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number two, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number two, to lead.com.